It's been 6 days since Janelle Kelly, a 17-year-old from Sacramento, California, went missing. Since then, her two best friends, Katie Clements and Megan Cleary, have not rested for a moment in aiding the search effort. Katie and Megan are here with us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Welcome to you both. Now, I know this is a very difficult time, but if you could say something to Janelle right now, what would it be?
That we miss you, and we're looking for you. And Steffi P from biology is pregnant.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, she says that she's not, but she's like totally wearing sweaters in May.
Tell us how you've been helping to spread the word about Janelle's disappearance. I know you've started a Facebook page.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has all of this information that we put up about like where Janelle was last seen and like what she was wearing. And then we also posted, just in case Janelle sees it, some pics of Shauna's disgusting new cornrows.
Shauna is such a hot mess express.
And you've also organized Amber Alerts across the state of California, is that right?
Yeah, we just want to get the word out. You just think that this is something that would happen to like Aaron, not Janelle.
God, I could totally see Aaron getting kidnapped, and you know what, I bet that she would like it too.
She's such a slut. Jim and Tracy, you don't even know. We call her the Balls-a-saurus because she loves to put balls in her mouth. Oh, I hate her.
Right, but you have been working extensively with the police on this case, haven't you?
Yeah,
we told them you did it.
I what?
She's just kidding.
Oh my God, you totally just and your baby like freaked out.
I did not do it.
God, she's making fun of you. I mean, she likes you.
Oh my God, shut up. He's like 50.
How old was Doug?
How old is that zit on your tit?
Oh my God, shut up. We're on TV.
Okay, but with all of your efforts, you still haven't heard a word from Janelle?
No, none.
I mean, we just keep hoping that she'll call or something.
Oh my God.
What?
Oh yeah, I totally forgot. She did call me.
What?
Yeah, but I was like in this movie, so I was like, oh, I'll call her back later. But then everyone was like, come to P.F. Chang's. And I got totally wasted on margaritas because Samantha's friends with one of the bussers.
Yeah. Well, so did she leave a message?
I mean, kind of. She said that this dude was like driving her down to Salinas.
So she's still alive.
Yeah, but I mean, I couldn't really understand her because Cambria was talking super loud about how her parents are buying her this new Explorer, even though everyone knows that her parents are like super poor.
Yeah, her house is like a storage unit.
Yeah, so, she's so full of shit.
Wait, have you alerted police?
When would I have done that? I had to get up at like ass crack early this morning to do the show.
Well, I'm sure with all of your search efforts, Janelle will be returned safely and be home soon.
Yeah, I just know that that the two of you and Janelle are in our thoughts.
Gross.
Now, we had Janelle's mother on yesterday making a plea for Janelle's safe return.
Wait, do you mean Janelle's mom or Janelle's dad's girlfriend? Because Janelle's dad's girlfriend is like a total wreck and it's hilarious.
No.
Oh my God, I wish you had met her dad's girlfriend. She's like 5 years old. One time we were at her house and we heard them boning and it was really gross.
Well, we hear it today. Now we'll be praying for Janelle's safe return. What? What did I do?
Oh my God.
Is it the sweater? I normally don't wear sweaters like that.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, hop in, man.
Hey, man, who's car?
You know Wooderson?
Oh. How's it going, man?
Hey.
Pretty good. How's it going with you?
Say, man, you got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Pot sales are flying high in Colorado, with monthly marijuana sales now passing the $100 million mark for the first time. That according to the state's Department of Revenue. Alicia Cunha has that story live from Denver. Alicia.
Hi, John. Yes, if you look at the trend, marijuana sales are only increasing. According to the Colorado Department of Revenue, recreational and medical dispensaries brought in a combined $100.6 million in the month of August, a record since recreational pot became legal here. For comparison, the first month of sales in January 2014 tallied a little less than $50 million. To grasp what all of this means, consider this. In the fiscal year running from July 1st, 2014 to end of June 2015, Colorado became the first state in history to bring in more tax revenue from marijuana than alcohol by a large margin.
I think more people are realizing that it's really not that big of a deal, and there are, you know, there's a source of income to be had, you know, for various reasons.
Meanwhile, Colorado is grappling with illegal cultivation operations that have moved in. In September and October, federal, state, and local law enforcement arrested 32 people for illicit growing and seized nearly 20,000 plants.
People come in from out of state thinking that because marijuana is legal under state law in Colorado, that, well, maybe their marijuana operation won't be noticed because people say, well, it's just another marijuana operation. Part of what we're doing with these takedowns is to send a clear message that that's not the case.
Now, recreational pot sales became legal in the state of Oregon at the start of this month, and that state is now seeing medical marijuana business drop as a result. The Oregon Cannabis Business Council says it's market saturation. So, John, there's an effort right now to allow those who are purchasing medical marijuana to get tax-exempt status on those purchases.
What's the matter with that chest there?
What people are reefer?
What a reefer?
Yeah, man.
You mean that chest high?
Sailing. Lightly.
Get away from here. Man, is that the reefer, man?
That's the reefer, man.
I believe he's lost his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
Have you ever met that funny reefer man?
Reefer man!
Have you ever met that funny reefer man?
Reefer man!
If he says he swam from China, tell you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Reefer man!
Have you ever met funny reefer man?
Reefer man!
Have you ever met funny reefer man?
Reefer man!
If he says he walks the ocean, anytime he takes a notion, then you know you're talking to reefer man. Have you ever met this funny reefer man?
Reefer man!
Oh, baby, reefer man. If he trades your dimes for nickels and calls watermelon pickles, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Reefer man.
Have you ever met fun reefer man?
Reefer man.
Have you ever met a funny reefer man?
Reefer man.
If he takes such mania, wants to give you Pennsylvania, then you know you're talking to the reefer man. Yeah. You ever met a funny reefer man? Have you ever met a funny reefer man? If he says Wall Street is panic, cause he won't sell the Atlantic, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Anyone who follows politics these days knows it's hard to get Democrats and Republicans to agree on anything. But in Anne Arundel County, it took medical marijuana to bring both sides together when it comes to zoning dispensaries and growing facilities. It all started when County Executive Steve Hsu called for an all-out ban in the county, which didn't sit well with the other council members.
We knew that we were going to deal with this issue at some point, but we weren't sure how much time we had to actually dedicate to it. And so by the county executive introducing this ban, it certainly sort of lit the fire, if you will, on this particular subject.
Council Vice Chairman Pete Smith, a Democrat, said it's almost a no-brainer coming up with a compromise bill, working closely with Republicans like Councilman Derek Fink, working off a similar bill already in place for methadone clinics.
I mean, we were able to go to the county executive with a bipartisan solution to limit where it can go in the county, not an outright ban, not open it up completely, but put a strict limit on where it can be where it can go.
Some of the highlights of the proposed bill include: growing and processing facilities cannot be within 1,000 feet of homes and schools, dispensaries must be at least a mile apart, growing operations must be at least 10 acres, and no on-site physicians prescribing or dispensing of marijuana.
One of the most important pieces was I wanted community involvement, whether it's distribution or growing or processing. For me, I thought it was important to understand, or for a community to know if a facility was going to be in there.
We don't want to have a Ritchie Highway or a mountain road loaded with the different dispensaries throughout the communities, and we were able to accomplish that.
Everyone knows marijuana is dangerous and medical pot is really strong. That's why it's so hard in California to get your weed card unless something's really wrong. Pay a visit to my doctor. It's a long shot, but I gotta try. He hands me a list of all the ailments I can have to qualify. Can't believe what I am reading. This is just what I've been needing. A government supply to get legally high. Weed card, it's what I need. Hardly ever okay, always. But it's not an addiction, 'cause my doctor gave me a prescription.
We're in Germany's capital, where people take to the streets in favor of the controlled sale of cannabis. The German Federal Institute for Drugs and Medical Devices rejected the application made by the borough Friedrichshain-Kreuzberg to sell the drug. The regulators said they didn't accept cannabis as an alternative medical remedy, and that they only accept very few exceptions for medically justified cases. The district applied in June for the legally controlled sale of hashish and marijuana. The application was to open four shops in which adults registered in the borough could buy up to 10 grams of cannabis at a time and up to a total of 60 grams per month. The mayor of the district explained that their goal was to act in the interests of youth and consumer protection. The district has 1 month to decide whether to appeal the decision.
You can get your card for having headaches, bad dreams or anxiety, propensity for drugs or alcohol, anorexia or obesity, too fat, too thin, either way you win. Carpal tunnel syndrome, color blindness, and stuttering, tooth decay, fatigue, depression, motion sickness, impotence or TMJ. You can smoke to quit cigarettes, for asthma or your mother f***ing Tourette's. It's a dream come true, there's nothing pot can't do. Weed card, it's what I need. Hardly ever okay, always. But it's not an addiction, 'cause my doctor gave me a prescription. Break it down now. Got back pain, need Mary Jane. Can't handle this, need cannabis. Got a stomach ache, got a wake and bake. Have an injury, need THC. Get fucked up for your hyperhidrosis, which is sweaty palms, in case you need a diagnosis. It's not a crime, it's 420. It's what I need, hardly ever okay, always. But it's not an addiction, 'cause my doctor gave me a prescription.
There's only two types of people who are against drugs: the people who have never done drugs and the people who really sucked at doing drugs. And everyone else has to suffer. That's why the whole medicinal marijuana thing. I mean, I've done some benefits for them, but first of all, I'm not a pot smoker. I've tried it, gave it plenty of opportunities. It didn't work for me. If it works for you, have at it. But just the argument where it's a pro-drug argument, but the fact that they have to say it's, you know, this is just about medicine. No, if you're going to have a pro-drug argument, start the argument where it starts. It's my business. Fuck off. I mean, you don't put that on the sign. You're going to use tact and stuff that I don't have. That's why I'm not in charge of any of those things. But, I mean, but they have to do it. The reason, it boils down to old f*** vote. And that's the problem with this country. Old f*** vote and we don't. We have this to do. Old f*** have nothing to do but judge you and vote. They don't have to work at UPS on Super Tuesday. They have nothing to do. Hang around the polls, judge you, and vote. They're bitter. Why is he smiling? It must be something wrong with him. Yeah, vote no on whatever it is he's doing. He's smiling. We don't vote. We got this to do. Right? And that's why they have to put the argument in old people context. Don't worry. Old people are going to baby boomers are going to start to die in droves, and it's a good thing. I know a lot of them are our parents, but sorry, you're going to go. Sorry, Ma, goodbye. Right? Yeah, your day's over, and there's new shit that you won't accept because you people do that. Old people, they look back at the good old days, and it was good because they were young, but they act like it was the day. No, it was because youth is good. That's gone, and you're it's not the day, and then they reject anything that's new. It's like we do with hip-hop if you're in your 30s. Oh, no, that ain't music. We had music back when 38 Special was around. Why no? Let's all fucking kill ourselves for the hypocrisy, right? But that's why they use the medicinal marijuana argument, because that, if you put it in a medical context, now old people are all sympathy and heartstrings. You know, we don't want to get high. This is really just about Jimmy with glaucoma. Bring out Milky Eye Jim. He gets to the old people, and old people see the milky eyes, and they go, my friend Fran from Normandy had milky eyes the last time I saw him, and I vote yes, right? And it's a bullish argument, but it wastes too much time. Start the argument where it starts. I have the right to do whatever the hell I want to my own body. If it kills me slowly, happy for me, fuck you, clack, clack, stop me. Right? Start the argument, because you're wasting my time. You're gonna spend 25 years so Milky Eye Jim can get a government-subsidized bong hit of some dirt weed. I want to buy mushrooms at Walmart tomorrow. Let's go just fight this one out. All illegal narcotics are medicinal. Boredom is a disease worse than cancer. Drugs cure it. With little or no bad side effects if used as directed.
Susan Sarandon had a great quote. They asked her about, she was going to Coachella, and they asked her, are you going to get high or whatever? She's like, you know, I do this, I do that. And he's like, will you get high there? She's like, I don't know. She goes, I have a rule. I never get high if I have to pretend that I'm not.
It didn't get much time in the CNN debate, but the issue of marijuana did come up. At issue, are these candidates actually hypocrites for their views on marijuana? And do they know what they're talking about, or are they just selling fear? This is a reality check you won't see anywhere else. Well, during last week's CNN debate, there were a lot of issues that came up, frankly, and mostly the candidates talked about each other. But in the slim sections that dealt with policy, one issue had some fairly interesting responses. Marijuana.
There's at least one prominent example on the stage of someone who says they smoked pot in high school, and yet the people who are going to jail for this are poor people, often African-Americans and often Hispanics, and yet the rich kids who use drugs aren't.
So 40 years ago, I smoked marijuana, and I admit it. I'm sure that other people might have done it and may not want to say it in front of 25 million people. My mom's not happy that I just did.
So Jeb Bush admits that 40 years ago he smoked marijuana, and he's probably right that at least some of the other candidates who are running against him for president have as well. So what? The real issue here is the one of hypocrisy. Does Bush or other politicians have one set of standards for themselves and one set for others?
And it is hypocritical to still want to put poor people in jail.
I don't want to put poor people in jail, Rand.
Well, here's the deal. You oppose medical marijuana?
No, I did not oppose when the legislature passed the bill to deal with that very issue. That's the way to solve this problem. Medical marijuana on the ballot was opened up. There's a huge loophole. And it was the first step towards getting to a Colorado place. And as a citizen of Florida, I voted no.
So Bush voted against medical marijuana as a private citizen only? Actually, no, that's not true. In 2014, the Tampa Bay Times reported that Bush did, in fact, campaign against Florida's medical marijuana initiative, saying, quote, I strongly urge Floridians to vote against Amendment 2 this November. The medical marijuana bill in Florida did fail. Then Carly Fiorina jumped in.
My husband Frank and I buried a child to drug addiction. So we must invest more in the treatment of drugs. I agree with Senator Paul. I agree with states' rights. But we are misleading young people when we tell them that marijuana is just like having a beer. It's not. And the marijuana that kids are smoking today is not the same as the marijuana that Jeb Bush smoked 40 years ago.
So let's talk about those two claims. Is marijuana like having a beer? Well, no. It's actually safer. According to the federal government's National Survey on Drug Use and Health, finds that marijuana causes fewer trips to the emergency room than alcohol or even over-the-counter pharmaceuticals per 1,000 users. Here's another. According to the CDC, 1 in 10 deaths among working-age adults can be attributed to excessive alcohol use. Alcohol poisonings account for more than 2,000 American deaths every year. Well, meanwhile, most experts say there has never been a documented overdose death from marijuana use in someone without an underlying condition. So what Fiorina says there about alcohol versus beer, it isn't true. But what is also not true, that marijuana led to the death of her daughter.
My husband Frank and I buried a child to drug addiction.
But that drug was not marijuana. In fact, according to Fiorina's own book, Rise to the Challenge, she claims it was her stepdaughter's struggles with alcohol, prescription pills, and bulimia that led to her death at age 35. It's at the end of the first prologue that Fiorina writes this, quote, Lori's potential was never fulfilled, but death is not the only thing that crushes potential. What I also know is that Americans are failing to achieve their potential today. So what you need to know is that while technically Fiorina didn't say which drug was responsible for her stepdaughter's death, she was entirely dishonest by making the next statement out of her mouth about marijuana use. Why isn't Carly Fiorina calling for a ban on prescription drugs? Why not a ban on alcohol? We've already tried that. Meanwhile, marijuana, which should be called cannabis really here, comes in hundreds of strains. And today, tens of thousands of American families are benefiting from cannabis oil. It's helping to cure children with epilepsy and treating people who are dying of cancer. Fiorina's statements and the policy she advocates would rob those families of hope while doing nothing to prevent the tragedy that she and her husband went through.
Perhaps I'm foolish in the sense that I shouldn't be worried about being arrested. I should be worried about being shot. If that's how they play the game, then I'm in big trouble because they'll just come and shoot me, and you too if you get into this. But if we actually have a legal system that works, then this is called advocacy, and it's not a crime. It's an exercise of the First, Fourth, and, a couple of other amendments to the Constitution. Henry David Thoreau, you don't get more American than that, said that if you are right, you are a majority of one. And we live by majority rule. I don't feel heroic. I mean, it's not false modesty or anything. I don't feel heroic doing this. This is really humdrum to me. I just could not behave any other way because of what I've seen. I mean, this transcends laws. All that it's seen as preposterous. I mean, I believe in universal laws. You shouldn't kill people. You shouldn't lie to people. You shouldn't inject yourself between lovers. Most cultures, I think, recognize a set of universal laws. But thou shalt not smoke marijuana? Surely the God of Mount Sinai has better things to do than worry about that sort of thing. We have to create a new option. All social progress is made by people taking chances. If I am an anomaly, some kind of dangerous sociopath, then my message will be swamped and lost in the noise of the tumult of the world because there are thousands of messages out there. If, on the other hand, this is a great and important domain of truth, then they are crazy to try and repress it because it cannot be repressed. They have tried to repress it. Oh,
why have they tried to repress it? If use of psychoactive drugs is so good for the psyche, why have they repressed it?
They sought to repress it because there's something in the Western mind that is very nervous, that gets very nervous when you try to talk about the bedrock of ontology. McLuhan talked about this. He met great resistance, and all he was saying was that print had created certain kinds of unconscious biases in society in favor of uniformity, linearity, and like that. And he was amazed at the violence of the reaction against this. And he concluded that those cultures that have evolved from the phonetic alphabet are so removed from the stuff of the world, as opposed to languages like Chinese or Mayan or something like that, where there is a retention of the image in the written language, that the cultures descended from the phonetic alphabet are extremely paranoid about questions about the nature of reality. And that's what this is really about. The psychedelic issue does not relate to the drug issue at all. I mean, in fact, it's important to make this point. Drugs and psychedelics are not two members of a family. They are antithetically opposed to each other. The pro-psychedelic position is an anti-drug position. Now, how can this be, since we are accustomed to thinking of psychedelics as drugs? Well, it's like this. What is it that we object to about drugs? And I think everybody can agree, maybe not everybody, but most people can agree, we do have a drug problem. I mean, if you live in the inner cities, you see people getting all twisted up behind this stuff. We have a drug problem. So what is it about drugs that we find problematic? Well, I think that what is objectionable about drugs is that they cause unconscious, obsessive, destructive, self or other behavior. Unconscious, obsessive behavior is intolerable because we are conscious people accustomed to injecting choice and meaning into our lives. You cannot have meaning if you do not have choice. This is why we don't have to spend any time at all talking about whether the world is predestined. Because if the world is predestined, then I'm not saying what I'm saying because it's what I want to say. I'm saying what I'm saying because I can't say anything else. And you're sitting there because you can't not sit there. So it makes the world very dull and uninteresting. Compulsive, unexamined, obsessive behavior is the quintessence of anti-human behavior.
Thank you.
psychedelics do. They destroy behavior patterns, destroy cultural assumptions, completely hold everything up for grabs, completely throw open the possibility that reality could be any of a number of ways that are not culturally sanctioned. So in that sense, the psychedelics are almost the answer to the drug problem. And the early use of psychedelics reported spectacular progress with alcoholism. Well, now see, the people who believe that alcoholism is a disease, and I don't follow this literature closely, it seems to me this is a preposterous statement. I mean, a disease? You mean like influenza and smallpox and AIDS? Alcoholism is a disease? Can you get it if you don't practice safe sex? Or do you have to wash your eating utensils? It isn't a disease. What it is it's a failure of self-image. And the reason LSD, in many cases, had a tremendous impact on alcoholic behavior was because it just showed people what they were doing. It said, this is you. You're a drunk. You're a burden to your family, a bore to your friends. You smell bad and you're useless. How do you like it? And so somebody said, I don't like it. I said, well, then stop drinking. That's what it is. That's how psychedelics cure addiction. And nobody, when they talk about addiction, nobody ever talks about what is called self-restraint. There's no responsibility involved, you know. And AA, their position, their goal is not to understand the nature of the universe. They're not in the philosophy business. They're trying to get people to stop drinking. So to maximize that goal, I think that they go far overboard. First of all substances, they say, if you're an alcoholic, then you must forswear everything. I don't know how they relate to tobacco. But see, what you've got to understand is we are set up for addiction. It's just like language and cognition and all of these other things. We are the animal which addicts. Other animals don't addict. And addiction is a way of relating to the world. We don't not only addict to drugs, we addict to each other, to chunks of territory, to behavior patterns. We attach to everything. And it's very real. It's physiological. I remember years and years ago, a woman left me for a homunculus. And I was appalled. And it became, I was like vomiting every 4 hours, could not sleep, would burst into tears in inappropriate situations, of which there were many in my life. And heroin withdrawal cannot be worse than that. I mean, are you kidding? Vomiting every 4 hours? And then one night, in the middle of the night, I was just frantic, because I felt like when I was awake, I felt like I wanted to be asleep. When I should have been sleeping, I couldn't sleep. And I was just dragging myself to classes. I felt, you know, this is crazy. I should turn myself in. But they don't have crisis centers for broken hearts. What are you going to do? So then, in the middle of one of these bouts, I went to the medicine cabinet, and this woman who had left me had left all these pills there. And I sorted through all these pills and came upon a small bottle of tranquilizers, of a very mild tranquilizer, like Valium or something. Well, I had never taken a Valium. So I said, I'll take half. And I took it, and the next morning, or a few hours later, I went out to breakfast, and somebody came up and sat at my table and said, well, how are you coping since Hermione left you? And I said, who? You know, I it really gave me respect for tranquilizers. I mean, I was appalled. I was appalled that something so real to me, so much me, half the tab, I didn't care, you know, let him go. And then I realized all the people around me, this is how they deal with emotional crisis. Nobody wants to feel anything. I mean, the moment that an unpleasant emotion rears its head, people go take Valium or something else and cut themselves off from feeling.
Smack dab in the middle of the cuddles and kills. Gorilla Jimmy City Limits with a bucket of pills. Tolerant, no I don't, immediately ameliorate him. Nope. I meet him, greet him, read him, and rate him. See if I hate
him. Gonna hard rock, run through the speaker top. Tweet and read a blue cone, dead bones it. A pack of lunchbox, walk to the stone. Jump into the chemical, sold him, I'm zoning. I'm irrational, paranoid, tragic. And the button on my chest said panic. Punch it, hold up, don't touch me. I'm a savage with a rabid ass cunt.
You wanna get it, you wanna quit it, you need to quit it. Getting evicted, you little witty, you pitch a ticket. It's still the trick. Either way you wanna go, get your digits. Body you up at the forces and body in his misery.
You take a pitch black lung and a purple heart. Then you kick back once the inertia start. And when the shipwreck sunk through the perfect dark, the serpent's arch alerts every circle shark. Your bloody cold water sounds the hors alarm. And when the first alarm's found, we observe the arc. Like a belly acre won't kick face to the curb. Rather kick when the face already raped by the worm.
Sad mania, pain colliding. Very little to say to these politicians behind it. But this, you better lose in the news or lose living. This little kid walking the ass quick to produce a baby.
You should medicate any area that the pain. And when you're in the street, you should peep the sets of strangers. Act as if every fact to cast a chaos. They be looking for any situation they can play on. Respectively injecting these thoughts to tame us. Negative speaking, they be creeping the entertainers. When you out of doubt, they run to a rotted or safe. In retrospect, the infected passing your papers.
I design, kill, pain, kid, penmanship. Federal analog, hard, unedited. With a CUNY degree and young numbness. Angels on the rooftop.
How did they trumpet?
I'll be buried to the neck in the all-star bloopers. Periscope down, hot boss or cruiser. Porcelain, our pewter authority will be overruled the second Chucky Uberalis news hit the sewers.
Riggity baggity, this city fit my style exactly. With the back spin and the fat laces, cause their glasses chase rap daily.
Riggity raggity.
Riggity raggity.
Rickety rackety, this city for my style exactly. Near the train tracks, in a garbage bag, with a cement cracks. We a part of that.
Riggity raggedy.
Rickety rackety.
When you take two to the vein, and it takes two to the brain, you don't care, you to the pain. Maniac losing the game. Well, guess what? You win the public, you be like, do it again. He's a mob, a blood sucker, you can do what he can.
On the side of the block, through the bus stop. You paying a fare, that's a trust fund. Little ugly ass thug, like some fun. To batter the rush, I walk punch drunk. In a whole world of chores now. Before the step is a goose, kick your door down. I'm in a getaway whip with Ace Prison. You got the same shit, stitch in his missing.
Okay, left the field. Stealth, dressed to kill. Self. Yeah. Mega walk with a horizontal neck spin. Swim funny to vertical bobblehead, yes man.
When the evil falls in, it drops the pole and off the core. It's better than the ditch you represented. The percentage it was a vintage. And the qualitatives you want to made it. We bought the flavors, niggas, you all hate us.
Anyone from Antagony Squad to Family Tissue can testify that the look in my eyes is genuine issue. I'm a freak in the flesh, penetrate lust. Spin the vaginal juices like otters of an A-under.
Don't pick it to miss below Nancy LaCourse. No picnic, misled, or is advancing. No business, insist, board with candy. Liqueur, citizen X with that all fours dancing. Corporals landing ashore, all sore bone knit with rickety rackety porn fancy. We through the hell and high water hot zone. Disease in a minute, the idiot got home.
Now I'm teaching first grade and I wanna participate. I wanna grid the papers with, I don't wanna give them A's. FDF minus F times set time. Well, let me parent and give them a piece of my mind. Cause I don't wanna give a good future, I'll shoot ya. With doozy, so we're ruling.
Okay, plus minus flush mine.
Even leaving them bruised up. Stack kids, pack you lunches in the cooler.
Rickety brackety, this city fit my style exactly. Knit a fire ladder, where the wires gather. Drink water, eat fish, smile after.
Rickety raggedy.
Rickety raggedy.
Rickety raggedy, this be living my shit exactly. With a threesome, give it treatment. Sex on drugs, girl can't keep up.
Rickety raggedy.
Rickety rackety.
Come on.
addict to territory. This is war, our turf, our land. Now this arises, again, a consequence of agriculture. Before agriculture, nobody had land. Land was something you walked around on as you migrated behind your herds. Once it was cognized as an object and fixed upon, they were ready to knock the other guy's brains out for setting foot on your territory. We all do this. I mean, we are addicted to caffeine, outrageous caffeine addictions, money, sugar, praise, television. Now this is the favorite one to talk about because television is a forerunner of very insidious drugs to come. It's just the crudest and the first. But imagine if after World War II a drug had been introduced into this country of right-thinking, hard-working, decent Christian people such that 20 years after its induction, the average American citizen would be spending 6.5 hours per day involved in this drug. That's the figure for television consumption in this country. The average American watches 6.5 hours a day of TV. It is an electronic drug. It is an obsessive behavior pattern, an unconscious behavior pattern, and a physically destructive behavior pattern. I mean, it's done more for the rebirth of hemorrhoid specialists than any other single force in our society. So, but people say, well, that's not a drug, that's entertainment. 6.5 hours a day of entertainment? You know, before electronic media, a person could regard themselves as a great patron of, let's say, the musical community, and maybe they would hear 12 live musical performances a year when they would go to a theater. I mean, how many experts on Beethoven in his generation or the generation following heard, let's say, the Ninth Symphony more than several times in their intellectual life? Because, you know, you have to get a lot of people together and cooperating to perform the Ninth Symphony. To us, the Ninth Symphony is an object. Listen to it. Listen again. Listen again. We are able to turn experience, we are able to objectify experience and then addict ourselves to it. Well, is this bad? How can it be bad if it is so written into us? I don't think it is bad. I think what we have to do is choose our addictions, choose our behavior patterns. I mean, one can choose to be addicted to punctuality. I'm accused of this. Other people are addicted to always being late. One can be addicted to meaningless sexual encounters.
She's gonna hand you a red-headed Gabriel coming from the bar in a plastic tie. He's gonna swing from the tree of life. He's gonna try to sell you on a great big lie. But when you speak to her, her eyes light up. The music spills right into your cup. The minstrels play and the waitress brings ice. There are pies on a carousel, half a slice. But watch out, she ain't no good for you. He's gonna spin like the tractor pull. She'll sit back when he tells his tale. He's gonna yell when he drinks his beer. She'll sit back and drink ginger ale. But when you speak to her, her eyes light up. The music spills right into your cup. It's so abrupt and it's so concise. There are pies on a carousel, half a slice. But watch out, she ain't no good for you. I say watch out, she ain't no good for you.
Okay. like to put you in her zoo, right between the canaries and the cockatoos. She'll pull out your feathers for her brand new hat, and when she's done that, she'll feed you to her cat. So watch,
watch out,
watch she out. Ain't watch out. No watch good out. For you.
Watch out,
she
watch out.
Ain't no good watch for you. Watch out, she ain't no good for you.
Should we not fall in love because we pheromonally lock together with this person and become a single unified set of drives and goals? The physiological aspects of addiction have been, I think, very strongly overdrawn. I smoke cannabis every day at most opportunities, and have for years and years, I mean, since I was 18 years old. Every once in a while, I stop just to see what that's like. It's trivial. It's utterly easy. All that happens is a shift in behavior patterns. I read more. That's what happens when I stop smoking cannabis. And yet I'm supposed to be breaking out into cold sweats, wandering aimlessly through the streets of the city, staring up at lighted windows. Yeah, right. So I think we give each other too much permission to be weak in this area. What is never talked about in talk about addiction is self-restraint. I mean, for heaven's sake, you know, just take hold of yourself. Yeah, responsibility. And if you tell people addiction is a disease, addiction is it's because you're black, it's because you're poor, it's because you're this, it's because you're that, you have just given them a whole bunch of reasons not to take responsibility for their own situation. And what is needed in these addictive situations, I think, is the shock of recognition. I believe, see, that if you don't take drugs, you're unbearable. And there's no, I can't think of a society on earth where people don't take drugs that any of us would want to have anything to do with. I mean, let's take Calvinist Geneva, say. I imagine that as an example of an environment of moral rectitude. I mean, these people did not wear bright colors, didn't listen to music, never drank coffee, never smoked, forget about alcohol, sex for procreation, so forth and so on. And they are paradigms of the male ego frozen in place, didactic, paternalistic, all-knowing, filled with hellfire and damnation. Everything is seen in terms of a moral dimension that makes impossible demands on the human animal. Rather, I think what we should realize is that somehow our evolution into a civilized, self-reflecting being is caught up in these synergistic relationships that our conscious mind has with various things in the environment, so that we should choose our addictions. Now notice that addictions, to my mind, and you know, you can argue with this if you want by choosing extreme examples, but addictions to natural substances are harmless.
It's all love. I don't eat no meat, no dairy, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel, barbecue tofu. No fish though, no candy bars, no cigarettes. Only ganja, fresh squeezed juice from oranges. Exercising daily to stay healthy. And I rarely drink water out the tap cause it's filthy.
Lentil soup is mental fruit and ginger root is good for the youth. Fresh vegetable with them Itai stew. Sweet yam fries with the green callaloo. Careful how you season and prepare your foods, cause you don't wanna lose vitamins and minerals. And that's the jewel. Life brings life, it's valuable. So I eat what comes from the ground, it's natural. Let your food be your medicine, no excedrin. Strictly herb generates from the sun, cause I got melanin and drink water. 8 glasses a day, cause that's what they say.
They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We got to start taking better care of ourselves. They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We got to start taking better care of ourselves. Be healthy, y'all.
So I think that this disruption of our relationships to psychoactive plants is what set us on the long, hard, downward path into neurosis. And it began with agriculture, with the narrowing of our spectrum of plant awareness from many, many plants down to the rye, the oats, the barley. And it's interesting that then out of this came the cultivation of, I think beer preceded wine. Beer is an older thing than wine. That comes out of the fact of having created surpluses. Because the way beer was discovered was through the fermentation of grain that was stored. If you didn't have surpluses, you would never discover the psychoactive properties of fermented grain. It's very interesting. In Nepal, the Newari people have an alcoholic beverage that when it's put in front of you, it looks like a bowl of granola. It's dry. They pour it out of a sack into your cup, and you say, you know, this is beer? And then they come along with boiling water and pour it over it, and then you get this foamy, lightly fermented, contaminated grain water. And to my mind, that clearly is then how fermentation of grains and production of alcohol was established. Notice that it was also the accumulation of surplus from the agricultural adaptation that creates the need for defense. Because now you've got a surplus. Now you have to guard your surplus from everybody who doesn't have any. The other thing that creation of surpluses caused was the invention of barter and money and this sort of thing. Because now you have something that you can trade for something that you don't have. So all of these adaptations, also a nomadic people cannot move a grain surplus with them. So if your harvest one year, if you're a semi-nomadic people, that's a people who, like in the Amazon, they plant things and then they leave them and go away and they have like a yearly peregrination. And when they come back to that place a year later, there's all this food ready for them. Well, imagine a nomadic people who were doing that kind of quasi-agriculture with cereal, and then there's one year of great weather and great rainfall, and when they arrive at their little wheat patch, so much wheat has been produced that they can't move it. They can't take it with them. So then they say, well, we have food now, so we don't have to keep hunting, so let's spend the winter here. And this interruption of the cycle of nomadism to deal with unexpected surpluses obviously spawned the idea in people's minds, well, wouldn't it be great if we had surpluses every year? And then that says, well, that won't happen if we're as careless as we have been about our sowing and harvesting. But maybe if we're very careful and till the land and carefully plant and do careful weeding, we'll have to stay here and weed, but then we'll get this tremendous payback in the end. So to my mind, the invention of agriculture broke our relationship to the wild plants and the lowered profile of the male ego, and set us on a path of defending wealth, creating fortifications, supporting more specialization, larger populations, so forth and so on. And from there to the present predicament, it's only a moment.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
I'm Gregory Dawson, filling in for Clifford Baines, who is being hanged for high treason. A new poll from the Shuttleworth Institute finds an increasing number of parents are reporting the appearance of esoteric posters, incense, and glass pipes among their teenagers' possessions. How can we keep our teens from turning to shamanism?
Look, parents need to be able to recognize shamanic behavior in order to prevent it.
Yes. If you walk into your teen's room and you see him sitting there in a cloud of smoke, his eyes all bloodshot, then you know that he is in a shaman's trance.
True.
The report listed classic warning signs that a teen may be slipping into shamanism, including playing loud droning music to cover the sound of their chants, perfuming their rooms with incense to clear stagnant energies, and wearing charmed pendants like we're seeing here.
Right, and it's pretty easy to tell who the shamans are. They wear tie-dye t-shirts, they have long hair, and they have a peculiar musty scent.
Right.
If it smells like a shaman, it is a shaman.
Exactly. Right. You have to confront it. Otherwise, you're going to get a call from the principal saying that your child has not been at school for 3 days. You're going to have to face it. He's been spirit walking, wandering the lonely places of the earth.
Now, Duncan, in your new book, Communication, The Best Spell, you talk about how you caught your own 14-year-old son seething in a shamanic soul grip.
Yes, yes. I walked into his room and he was playing an MF Doom record over an episode of Wheel of Fortune. And he was saying they were syncing up perfectly. And I thought to myself, well, these are the delusions of a shaman. And then I went back into his room and I found this glass wand.
Yeah. God, it smells terrible.
How did you deal with it, Duncan?
Well, I tried to relate to him. I asked him, why do you think you need this wand? Couldn't you conjure up some passing grades instead?
I would have grabbed him by the ear and told him, don't bother to explain, young man. You were practicing Sather rune shamanism.
That stuff is
bad. And I am taking
news.
Away your moon phase ornaments and turning you over to the dream eaters.
Look, I know personally that that kind of harsh punishment does not work.
That's true.
Away my son Charlie's selenite moon crystals, but then he started doing his rituals with the toilet paper tube and a little bit of tin foil.
He must have been channeling the head of a foolish gibbon.
So I sent him to military school.
Good for you.
Mm. Yeah, but there he became possessed by the trickster god Coyote. He makes boys want to kiss other boys.
Coyote is very swift.
Now, go find the others. .com.
You know, I don't want to sound like a queer or nothing, but I'm really going to miss you guys when the show's over.